Remember when we kept talking about how we're saving a lot more money these days? Well, that seems to be changing. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Rima Jerez, in for Kai Rizdal. It is Thursday, the 23rd of December. Good to have you along. If all you wanted for the holidays was a smorgasbord of economic data, which of course you did, well, lucky for you, Christmas came 2 days early. So here are some highlights. We've got new data on consumer spending. It rose a meager 0.6% last month. Back in October, we told you it climbed 1.4%. And the thing we're going to take a closer look at right now is the latest data on the personal savings rate. It dropped to 6.9% last month, which is the lowest we've seen since December 2017. After a year and a half of socking away more of our income than we used to, American households are reverting back to how they used to save before the pandemic. Marketplace's Matt Levin explains why.
Sam Stovall is chief investment strategist at CFRA Research. He used to regularly drop $20 for lunch at a Chinese restaurant near his Manhattan office. When the pandemic forced him to work from home,
Now, go downstairs, open up a can of Progresso soup, and that ended up costing me one-tenth of that amount.
Americans were saving at record high rates in 2020 and early this year, mostly because they couldn't spend money outside the house. Some predicted consumers would forever be more budget conscious, realizing how much they could save by cutting down on lattes and happy hours. Turns out there's only so much Progresso we can handle.
I doubt that there's been any permanent shift in our savings behavior. I think it's very hard for humans to change their stripes for the long term.
So we're spending like we used to, which means we're saving less, again. We're also not getting as much money from the government, says Shannon Seery with Wells Fargo.
A lot of stimulus has begun to fade, right? We had enhanced unemployment benefits expire in September.
Inflation hurts, too. Pricier food and gas chips away at the piggy bank. And even if Omicron keeps us out of restaurants and malls this winter, it's unlikely we'll save a lot more, says Mark Hamrick with Bankrate.
With less stimulus being applied in the economy, with the economy basically having to walk on its own, I don't see a big influx of savings.
Plus, we have to pay for all these at-home COVID tests or bribe somebody to get one. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
So with all this data that's coming out, industries are scrambling, trying to figure out what the future of the economy is going to look like. And some big airlines have actually been knocking on the CDC's door. They want the agency to change its rules around quarantining. Right now, the guidelines call for employees to isolate for 10 days after getting a positive COVID test. But airlines want to change that. Marketplace's Lily Jamali has more.
First, it was Delta Airlines, then JetBlue, and there will likely be more airlines asking the CDC to cut the recommended quarantine time from 10 to 5 days. That's according to Airline Weekly editor Madhu Unnikrishnan. He says it comes down to not enough people in place.
If, say, 20% of an airline staff is out for several days during the busiest time of the year, then yeah, operationally they're going to be really hamstrung.
Unnikrishnan says carriers saw this happen during the COVID surge this past summer and again this fall.
And those were periods where there wasn't as much travel as there is expected during the holiday rush.
Holiday travel has been robust so far, even with the emergence of the Omicron variant. The available data show Omicron is more transmissible, but can be less severe than the Delta variant and others that came before it. With so much of the airline workforce vaccinated, Dr. Monica Gandhi, who specializes in infectious disease at UC San Francisco, says the 5-day quarantine makes sense.
We now know that people who are vaccinated, their immune system comes rushing in as fast as it can to try to bring down that virus, to kill that virus and render it non-infectious. It's what the immune system does.
Gandhi says the virus is evolving and it's time for pandemic policy to do the same. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, traders were in a holiday mood. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. So Lily was just talking about airlines wanting some relief. There's another big sector of this economy that's feeling the brunt of all of this, and that's schools. The last thing many administrators want to do is even utter the phrase remote learning. So as of now, most districts, especially the big ones, say they're going to stay open and double down on trying to protect students from the virus. The thing, though, is that a lot of that responsibility of testing and contact tracing often falls on nurses. And that doesn't even include the typical non-COVID stuff they have to deal with day to day. Susie Ahn from WBEZ in Chicago has more.
I apologize for the phone. I may have to go.
Cameron Trout is a school nurse at Libertyville High School in the northern suburbs of Chicago.
She's going to administer an EpiPen, so they might need my help.
On any given day, school nurses like her know they'll be dealing with predictable tasks like giving students scheduled medications. But then there's the daily dose of the unpredictable.
I was just dealing with a student who has an allergy to peanuts.
Allergic reactions, injuries from accidents have always been part of a school nurse's job. This year, as the pandemic continues, school nurses have a second job, juggling all the COVID procedures.
I will end up having to take work home that I can't get done during the day. Now I've shifted everything at home to be able to complete the reports that are due for the meeting tomorrow or the next day.
Schools have taken on regular COVID testing and contact tracing to help stop the spread. Trout says it's been necessary to keep kids in class as much as possible. Giving school nurses enough resources and support has been essential in that goal. Trout considers herself fortunate that her district has hired more nurses, but she could always use more help. Bridget Haroff is the president-elect of the Illinois School Nurses Association.
I know there's a lot of nurses who are not taking lunches, and they go home and they just continue to work at home on the weekends.
She says some schools have used COVID relief dollars to hire more people or to get temporary help from nursing students. But in other districts, nurses might divide their time between multiple schools, and it's stretching them thin.
You're not really getting a break from the work, which is really unfortunate and can definitely lead to some burnout.
Money isn't the reason people take the job, says Linda Madonza with the National Association of School Nurses. She says school nurse salaries average $10,000 to $15,000 less than other nursing jobs. Nurses care about their students and the community, but it's been rough during the pandemic.
We've heard that nurses who were close to retirement or thinking about it, that the pandemic may have kind of pushed them out.
Madonza says before the pandemic, about a quarter of schools in the country did not employ a school nurse at all, while only about 40% employed nurses full-time. She says the pandemic has at least brought more attention to school nurses. And she points out a bill in Congress would help to get more school nurses hired, especially in vulnerable districts where the school clinic is the only access to healthcare for some students.
We are public health out there in the schools and in communities, and we offer a lot to our students and staff.
And she says nurses need support so they can better care for students' other needs. Bridget Haroff in Illinois points out more kids this year are dealing with mental health issues. She says some kids missed out on a lot last year when buildings were closed.
Some of it is playing catch up and trying to get back into the routines. You know, helping to advocate for what those students need is a huge part of this year.
The more support and help nurses have, the more they say they can focus on the core of their job, keeping students physically and emotionally healthy. In Chicago, I'm Susie Ahn for Marketplace.
It's been about a year and a half now since the protests of 2020 that followed the murder of George Floyd. A part of that movement, you probably remember, were all those lists circulating with Black-owned businesses people could support. Aaliyah Wanick's name was on some of those lists. She's a speech therapist in the Bay Area, also a clothing designer with a business on the side. We called her up to see how things have been going.
I think it's just been more of a leveling out of kind of the craziness of 2020, when a lot of attention started coming towards my way and towards other Black-owned businesses. I saw such a spike. It really propelled me into this new kind of level where it was more about, oh, okay, like this is something that I now have to really make like a stronger choice of, can I continue to handle two full-time jobs? Because my brand is becoming very much full-time. This past year, I actually did go part-time because my answer to the question of can I do two full-time jobs and do them really well was not really. That was the answer to it. One thing that has really kind of changed for me across these past years is just constantly being like this productivity machine, like having to take advantage of every hour and what I'm doing. I wasn't really talking about having like a home life. I was really talking about, okay, coming home and maybe I can take a nap. And then from this time to this time, I'm going to get up and I'm going to work on orders after my speech therapy job. And so now I'm really trying to find a better balance and not to constantly look at myself as like someone who needs to be producing or needs to be doing something all the time. Thinking about in the months to come, like what's my focus? And really from an artistic standpoint, I'm really, I guess just more even from a soulful standpoint, really wanting to just present like joy of a Black woman. You know, I feel like in 2020, so much of our experience through social media and through spotlighting did have this connection through our suffering. And for me, I just really wanted to highlight and just move through with the joy that we have, the special, you know, magic about ourselves that no one can take away from us. So that's something that I'm really going to focus on just in my photography and how I shoot my products and how I present it on my site.
That was Aaliyah Wanick from the Bay Area. Coming up.
I don't know how sustainable that is long term.
Yeah, I don't know either. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones rose 196 points, 0.5%, to finish at 35,950. The Nasdaq went up 131 points, 0.8%, to end at 15,653. And the S&P 500 found 29 points, 0.6%, to land at 4725. We heard from Matt Levin that the personal savings rate plummeted to 6.9% last month. After 2 years of pandemic-induced savings, people are spending again. Looking at some banks, Citigroup was up 1%. JP Morgan Chase and Bank of America both gained 0.3%. The hottest thing to buy this season is something absolutely nobody wants. This week, Walmart limited the number of COVID tests per customer, as did CVS. CVS was up 0.4%. Walmart lost 0.2%. Competitor Target rose 1.5%. Bonds fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 1.49%. You're listening to Marketplace.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Marketplace. I'm Rima Khreis. Now, a story about taxi drivers in New York City. To own and operate a cab, you need to buy a medallion. It's kind of like a permit. And many taxi drivers saw it as an investment in their future. But 2 decades ago, the price of a medallion started to skyrocket, causing thousands of drivers to go into massive debt. Around 2018, the crisis got so bad that 9 drivers in New York City died by suicide. It all recently came to a head this fall. After a dozen drivers went on a hunger strike, Mayor Bill de Blasio struck a deal with the city's largest holder of taxi loans to help rescue drivers. Many drivers owed an average debt of $500,000. Like Dilip Singh. Dilip immigrated from India in the 80s. He was looking for a stable source of income to support his family. So in 1998, he bought a taxi medallion.
I paid that time $250,000.
Wow, that's a lot of money. How did you get that money?
All financing, broker financing, the bank financing those days.
Dilip took out a $250,000 loan with 12% interest. Sure, it was a ton of money, but the medallion was supposed to be a nest egg for his future retirement. His oldest child, Felicia, remembers her dad waking up each morning at 3 a.m. for a 10-hour shift.
My dad would come home and he'd say hello to everyone. And then he'd say, I had a good day today. He goes, yeah, I made like $200-$300 today.
He was making about $30,000 a year. And at the time, Felicia's mom was working as a cashier. For years, money was tight. They were just getting by. Then around 2013, things for Dilip, and actually nearly every cab driver in New York City, got pretty bleak. By then, two little companies known as Uber and Lyft had entered the scene. For hours, Dilip would drive his empty cab around Manhattan, wondering why so few people were flagging him down.
When I start noticing everybody looking at apps, or they checking apps, or they only watching Uber, it was, I said, what the hell is going on? I can't make a living like this.
Studies show that yellow cab drivers lost nearly 30% of their income in the years after ride-sharing apps became popular. Dilip was doing everything he could to keep up. But just to operate the cab was super expensive. There's insurance, gas, city-mandated checks, and, of course, the medallion loan payments. Altogether, his daughter Felicia says he was spending anywhere from $3,000 to $6,000 a month on his taxi. If that's just what you're paying in order to have a job, essentially, then like that's not even considering the mortgage, the bills.
That's right.
How did he even maintain? I just can't.
I mean, you don't. You end up pulling equity from your home or whatever you have to then pay bills or pay the medallion loan. That's what ended up happening to us.
To manage, Dilip kept refinancing his medallion, eventually taking out a loan for over $700,000. It felt impossible to keep up with the monthly payments. And it wasn't just him. Thousands of drivers were falling into debt. That's because for years, industry leaders had been steadily and artificially inflating the price of a medallion. And at the same time, banks and private lenders were offering drivers risky loans with complicated terms. They'd created a bubble, and at its peak, a medallion cost more than $1 million. Already hundreds of drivers had filed for bankruptcy, and now, after years of struggling, in 2019, Dilip decided to do the same.
I want to give up. It's not easy.
Things didn't get better.
And nothing got better.
After filing for bankruptcy, Dilip was on the phone with a lawyer and was having a hard time following what he was saying. So his daughter Felicia stepped in. The lawyer went on to say that as part of their bankruptcy, they might lose their home.
And I literally covered the mouthpiece where I talk with my hand, and I started to hysterically cry. And my parents are watching me just cry as he's explaining the situation.
To keep their home, the Singhs would have to come up with a settlement amount of $150,000, money they definitely didn't have. By this point, the Singhs no longer felt like they could lean on traditional formal systems for loans. They did not want to go to a bank. So they decided to entirely depend on their friends and family instead. And they came through and raised the money. So the Singhs were able to save their home, but they still owe their community and will be paying them back for a while.
It's kind of like we're in this circle of debt.
Yeah.
It's like endless circle of debt, which I'm just exhausted by.
Dilip no longer has a taxi medallion, so now he shares a cab with someone else and works overnight.
He won't be able to retire. Like, that's just not a thing. I don't see it. So this is a hard place to be for everybody.
New York City is finally rescuing thousands of drivers who were trapped under impossible loans. It came too late for the Singhs, but Felicia hopes it'll prevent what happened to her family from happening to someone else. You can hear much more of Dilip and Felicia's story and how their community rallied for them by checking out the Marketplace podcast that I host called This is Uncomfortable. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. Earlier this month, you may have seen those familiar screenshots on Twitter and Instagram. It's become a sort of annual ritual of people sharing their Spotify Wrapped. If you haven't seen it, it's basically a roundup from Spotify of your listening habits over the last year. Like, my favorite artist was apparently Dua Lipa. Anyway, it is all a reminder of just how big Spotify has become in our lives. But the thing is, a lot of artists are just paid a fraction of a penny for every song that's streamed. In Seattle, Emily Fox from KEXP has more.
Mark Diamond is working on a new song in the Seattle studio Ruby Room Recordings. What could I do? He's now coming up on 4 years since he left his day job as a barista to be a full-time independent musician.
I would open the shop really early in the morning and there wouldn't be a lot of customers. And so in my spare time, I would start finding playlisters.
Spotify curates a lot of playlists on the streaming site. But Diamond was reaching out to independent playlisters who share their own collections. They weren't employed by Spotify, and they had a good following of listeners. Their playlist matched Diamond's genre. He'd reach out to these playlisters personally and suggest his music to them. After about a year or two of doing this, enough people added his music to their playlists, and his hustle paid off.
I had a friend reach out to me and say, "Hey, congrats on a million streams."
That's a million streams a month. Diamond calculated that Spotify was only paying him about 0.0032 cents a stream. But multiply that by a million, and he made $3,200 that month. He quit his day job and hasn't looked back since. One of the playlisters who took Diamond up on his pitch to add his music to a playlist is Alex Rainbird.
Playlists for every occasion and mood and day and feeling.
Alex Rainbird started off making music playlists on YouTube 10 years ago and eventually expanded to Spotify. Rainbird and his partner now make a living off of making music playlists every 3 days or so. Their focus is on independent musicians. They find most of their artists the same way they found out about Diamond. Artists get in touch with them directly. The musicians get streaming money through Spotify playlists, and Alex Rainbird Music makes money from YouTube ads.
So yeah, everyone kind of wins in that way.
But it's pretty rare to be able to make a living off of streaming as independent playlisters and musicians, especially for musicians who have to split their earnings with a label or other members of a band.
If, you know, you're coming up as a musician and you have three people in your band who have equal share of writing, suddenly you're dividing that number by three.
Zach Nesselpat is an independent musician in this band, No Swoon. He's also an organizer with the Union of Musicians and Allied Workers. The union has been pushing Spotify to pay artists more and be more transparent. Spotify did not return a request for comment on the union effort. It's hard for some musicians to maintain a million streams a month just to make a living, says Nesselpat.
I don't know how sustainable that is long term, depending on the whims of playlists to like your music. Like, what if, you know, you make three singles and it doesn't hit, right?
Streaming income can be unpredictable. Diamond says his streaming numbers have been as low as 600,000 a month and as high as 4 million. That's the difference between a monthly income of $2,000 and $13,000.
When streams are high like that, you save your money because you know that they're going to go down.
Diamond has also had to diversify where he gets his music income from. Streaming allowed him to quit his day job, but now he also gets income when his music gets placed on TV shows, and he started a subscription-based fan club.
That's $5 a month, and they get all my songs 1 week before everybody else.
One thing Diamond says is that he tries to avoid focusing on his streaming numbers each month because it can take the joy out of making music. In Seattle, I'm Emily Fox for Marketplace.
The This final note on the way out, saw this while I was scrolling on Twitter earlier and had to read the headline twice just to make sure it wasn't an Onion article. A Japanese professor has developed a prototype lickable TV screen. Yes, I will say that again. A lickable TV screen. Apparently, it can imitate food flavors. You spray some flavor canisters to create the taste of a particular food, and then it rolls on a film over a flat TV screen that you then taste. And the idea is to give people an experience like eating at a restaurant, maybe also especially helpful for aspiring cooks. I don't know. But apparently, a commercial version of the device, aptly named Taste the TV, would cost about $900 to make. All right, we gotta go. No ender today because we're running out of time. Amir Babawi, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Rick Carr, and Diantha Parker are the Marketplace editing staff. I'm Rima Jerez, and we'll see you tomorrow. This is APM.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.